Welcome to Growing Indoors, a new limited podcast series from Cannabis Business Times, brought to you with the support of Phos. Pleiades by Phos is the perfect supplemental greenhouse grow light. Its seamless integration creates best-in-class light uniformity and never casts a shadow on your crop. Pleiades delivers more photons for less energy, providing an efficiency that is unrivaled in the industry. External light harvesting sensors measure the natural light in the greenhouse and adjust the output of the LEDs accordingly, so they never run more than they have to. The fixtures can even be daisy-chained to avoid the overhaul of your current electrical setup. Every company boasts about being the best, and Phos proves it. Schedule a facility tour today at phos.com. That's phose.com. My name is Eric Sandy, and I'm the digital editor for the Cannabis Group at GIE Media. We're very pleased to continue our 10-episode project, where we will focus our interviews on indoor cannabis cultivation from a broad spectrum of angles. This is episode 4. My guest is Jim Strain, director of cultivation at Dicar Pharmaceuticals and the JR Strain brand. He's the master grower of Dicar Pharmaceuticals, according to Health Canada, as well. Dicar sources cannabis from leading genetics that are grown aeroponically in the Kootenay region of British Columbia. The company, under Jim's direction from the cultivation side of the business, produces chocolates, gummies, soft chews, caramels, handcrafted pre-rolls, rich flower, and other premium products, all under Phos LEDs. Please enjoy my conversation with Jim Strain.
All right, Jim, well, thank you so much for being on the show this week. Very glad to dig into some more indoor growing tips and perspectives from you and the team at Dicar Pharmaceuticals in Canada. I was thinking maybe to begin this conversation, if you could maybe paint a picture of a facility and some of the notable features that really help along your indoor cultivation strategy at Dicar.
Yeah, you bet. I guess first and foremost is the facility that the company acquired a few years ago, or more like five now, but it's a large existing warehouse, and the size of it is approximately 130,000 square feet. We built a large, or we bought a large shell so that we could expand into it. So there's multiple phases of design and expansion within the cannabis facility. Phase one was designed and built out to get licensed. So we put all of the essential components in phase one, including a couple small grow rooms, our extraction lab, all of the packaging, labeling rooms, trimming room, drying room, the stuff that we're going to need. Anyways, upon licensing in February 1st of 2019, I believe it was, we got our license to cultivate, and therefore that meant the expansion plans got underway. We just completed a $35 million expansion. So we start phasing those grow rooms online, and we stagger them once a week to load. So therefore we harvest ideally every week. So the facility is a big shell. We also chose it for, in the location we bought this facility, was, you know, inexpensive electricity, abundant clean water, and a small town that was very conducive. You know, the municipality was also very welcoming. So that those are, you know, advantageous items when you're looking for a large facility somewhere to put.
Absolutely, yeah.
I imagine building in downtown San Francisco would probably not be your go-to spot.
Yeah, a little tougher.
Yeah. Unless you're building vertical grows, maybe a whole office tower full right to the 80th floor.
And are you guys doing, is it single tier or multiple tiers?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. We are doing a bit of both. So, First things first is I'll state that we are an aeroponic grower. So we grow cannabis aeroponically. And we have six of the eight flowering rooms are single tier, and two rooms are stacked, double tier, aeroponics grow. All of these rooms, of course, have Phos LED lights. And we have two different models that we employ in the facility.
Excellent. I do want to get into the Phos lighting aspect of this, of course. But real quick, could you maybe set the stage for that aeroponic style of cultivation? And you know, maybe why you've gone that route or what it is that might set those plants apart from other styles of cultivation?
Yeah, sure. Aeroponic growing is a technique whereby there's no medium used in the facility. When I mean medium, I mean no rock wool, no cocoa, no dirt, no living soil. There is no medium. The roots are suspended in air inside of a large container. So we have a, call it a tub that's approximately 5 foot by 4 foot by a little over a foot deep. And then we can put up to 20 plants in that space or as few as one if we wanted. At any rate, the plants, the root zone is hanging in that tub. There's a mister or spray bar inside the tub that is automatically irrigated or sprayed nutrient solution on the roots at our schedule, whatever I determine, right? So we can schedule its irrigation frequency, duration. The analogy I use is kind of like putting a human being on an IV, right? If we had to repair you from a weekend in Vegas, we'll get you hooked up to the IV bag to get those directly in your bloodstream. So similar with nutrient delivery at an aeroponic root zone, there's no medium. We're not going through any medium or buffering to get to the root zone. So advantages are a few for sure. Disadvantages are also there in terms of there is no buffer to the root zone. If I have a pump fail in my aeroponic system, of course you can imagine what the roots would be like in an hour or two, right? So with medium, you get some safety advantages. With aeroponics, you get speed. You get a very rapidly growing plant. It also, when dialed, it can yield really high as well. So fast, health, vigor, but mainly no medium. And a couple of reasons with that is these facilities have no pest issues. So without medium, you know, we don't see pests. Most pests are a two-part, you know, they'll have a larval stage in the medium as well, like fungus gnats and thrips and other things live in medium. So without medium, we remove habitat for most pests. Bottom line is I don't even really feel a need or see the need. We don't use beneficial bios. A lot of places use insects. They have to use them to keep others at bay. So aeroponics is great. It also cuts back on wastefulness. And if you want to, I know it's a bit of greenwashing to say this because we are a cannabis facility endorsed. We use electricity. But we do not reject tons of media to the dump. We're not bringing a dump truck full or a semi-truck full of rock wool or cocoa every week or month, and we're not sending that out every month. At the end of the crop, there is quite literally no wasted part of the plant other than the stalks, the sticks. We can even harvest the roots, in fact. We can utilize the roots post-harvest, dry them up and grind them, and there's, you know, some evidence that roots have been used a long time for medicine. So basically low waste, a little bit greener rapidly, but also keeping costs down. So now I don't have a whatever X amount of dollar expenditure every month on cocoa or rock wool.
Yeah.
So that's aeroponics in a nutshell. I mean, there's so much more to it, and I can talk about the pros and cons of it probably for days. But that is the method we've chosen to go with. And it is difficult, and there's not a lot of places that do aeroponics, and a lot of people probably say we're nuts. Because most, if you know, tour the country and see cannabis growth facilities, they're using rock wool and drip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious from a room design perspective, are there any special considerations that one might need to think about if they want to go down the aeroponics route or even test it in a certain R&D room, so to speak? Do they have to be thinking about the room in different ways?
Yeah. Big time. Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. One of the most crucial mistakes you can make in room design when implementing aeroponics is not having chiller loops. So you will need chilling capacity to your reservoirs. Now, whether that's a central fertigation tank or remote or in the room with ETRO, regardless, your water needs to be chilled. And I see that as being the most common error. And then they're trying to retroactively install chilling coils to their grow rooms. So in our facility, we've thought about this right from day one. To start, we have an ammonia chiller plant. So we do not use conventional HVAC. We're not using you know, remote systems, compressor oven. We have an ammonia chiller plant, which is what a skating rink would use, or, you know, hockey facility, things like this. Therefore, we have cooling capacity everywhere, and we can drop remote chilling coils to the reservoirs. That's the first mistake that's made typically. And secondly is actually increased dehum capabilities for your rooms, because you'll have higher transpiration rates, most likely, in your crop. And therefore, you might find out you've run out of dehumidification capacity. So I know it's expensive, but usually over plan for your dehum. But I know it drives costs up a lot in the chiller plant, or your capacities in terms of tonnage for what you need.
Yeah. Is it, does it make sense for a grower to sort of take one step into the aeroponic world and make, like I said, maybe set aside an R&D room, or should they really be thinking about that strategically from the get-go when they're designing a building?
If they're designing the building, you should think about it from the get-go if you were thinking about doing aeroponics, because it's really hard to install after the fact, and the systems that are available after the fact are, but aeroponics, nonetheless, isn't something that you just jump into with both feet if you're building a new facility. It is the most challenging of all the grow techniques. I'm starting at soil is the safest, and then moving up into different mediums, and then you're going, you know, without medium, pure hydroponic systems are deep water culture, nutrient film technique, aeroponics. Once you remove media or medium from your grow system, you definitely want to have, somebody who's done it lots and skill sets in place. It's definitely, you know, high risk, high reward setup.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I'm curious, just in your own background, I guess what got you to land on aeroponics? What was sort of your journey to that style?
My journey starts in 1989 when I started growing cannabis right out of high school. So as soon as upon leaving high school, I started growing cannabis. And I grew it hydroponically. I did drip in buckets and all kinds of different things. I did eventually, through my legacy years, the gray market, black market, call it what it was. I grew aeroponically for quite some time. I did land on that technique. I liked it a lot. I appreciated the more science-based. When most of the growers go into the grow store with carting out bales of dirt in their truck, they had ProMix to stack to the ceiling. I wasn't. I like this technique for that reason, especially, again, in the black market, you can't be hauling truckloads of dirt into your house or warehouse at 1 a.m. It looks suspicious. So that's what helped me land on that technique. And then I honed it and perfected it over a long time. And when I say perfected, I'm not saying that it still does have challenges and it hasn't without risk, but if you were to start up a huge facility today and go all in with aeroponics, I would seriously look at design features and get ahead of the curve, or you'll be playing catch up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I know you mentioned obviously chiller loops and dehumidification. Certainly wanted to touch on lighting as well. Just in a general sense, talking about aeroponics, does the lighting strategy change when you're talking about that style of cultivation, just in sort of a broad general sense there?
Yeah, lighting definitely needs to be tailored to your style of growing, in my opinion. I know there is, again, grow rooms that are designed kind of for all. We have decided to go LEDs, and I will make sure I clarify this, that I've been growing 35 years, and of course, all we had was high-intensity discharge lighting, so we were using, HPS, 1,000-watt HPS, and of course, metal halides and others. So I was a bit of an old school relic in that regard, and I was skeptical of LED, and rightfully so, for quite a while. But let's be blunt, it's come a long way, and it's now surpassed the old school ways. So picking your lighting for your different grow techniques is important. For example, the FOS A3i is the flagship model. It's the one I've chosen for my flowering rooms. I like that because they're powerful fixtures. They're 1500 watt. I don't need to raise and lower those things all the time. Most 600 watt LED panels you need to keep them, you know, at a 12, 24 inch range max, maybe off your canopy to get the par that you want, the PPFD. So I don't want to be raising and lowering lights all day, every day, and going through rooms, and there's not real nice systems out there to do it on a push of a button. So these ones, I kind of call them set them, forget them. I can put them at a nice height that it's going to be conducive to most of my crops. And I can just dim them if I need a little less power. And I've set them at a height where at max power, I'm probably over what I need. Making sure you choose, like obviously for vertical growing, there are certain, you know, fixtures you want. Single tier growing, you're going to want a different fixture probably. And my choice was the A3i in the single tier and the FOS F1V in our double stack, as well as my veg rooms.
And just on the LED side of things, you know, obviously you've got a great bench of experience here with different lighting types and different grow environments. What are some of the attributes of LEDs that have really either become more known or more researched in the last few years that you've seen a visible and measurable impact on your plants with?
Definitely, number one is heat, and that they put out less than a conventional core coil, you know, ballast and bulb. It's also more spread out over, let's say I have a 5x4 tub, or let's, you know, what call it, you have a 5x5 grow tent, and you put in one bulb in the center, that's your center point of your light and your heat right there. With the new design of LEDs, the light bars spread out the light across that surface, so you have equal distance. So if you were to actually draw a line on a piece of paper from that center bulb down to your plants, of course, the ones directly under the bulb are closest. The ones on the periphery of the grow tent are literally a foot further away. And artificial light has an inverse square law, so it diminishes in its strength by every foot it travels. And I believe it's 1/4. So it's a fair amount. So artificial lighting, you lose strength quickly. So it was usually the goal to try and keep your lights as close to your plants as possible without burning them. Now, the burning came from the heat coming right off the bulb. So that was where, you know, that was the trade-off. And that's why they invented air-cooled tubes for bulbs. That's why they invented water cooled. In fact, I put 2 HPS bulbs inside of a water cooled tube about 4 feet long end to end and flowed water right across the bulbs. Not very safe though, of course. You can imagine with a bulb and not much electricity, you're cooling water. So again, probably not ideal. They have now water cooled LEDs, they have air cooled LEDs, etc. But number one is heat. So, of course, number two is electric, you know, savings electricity. They're more efficient. And, of course, that's a double-sided bonus because you're spending more electricity on HVAC to cool as well. So if you're putting in less heat in the room, you're also cooling it less. So you're saving on your HVAC bill. But it's the obvious statement is that they're just a lot more upfront. So you're trading off upfront cost for savings later. You can set up a grow facility with lighting much cheaper buying conventional 1,000-watt HPS fixtures. I think they're both 4x, maybe 5x for an LED. However, I won't have to change that thing's bulb once a year or better. The heat savings, I mean, there's the math. You do the math and the savings are there. So I guess it depends on your budget. If you can afford to get them, get them.
Well, yeah, that sort of goes back to what we were, you know, maybe starting the conversation with and maybe a good way of returning back to the beginning here. You know, we're talking about indoor facility design. We're talking about long-term expansion. As we get into early 2022, as you mentioned, you've got an expansion sort of ongoing. Yep. And this requires planning, of course. So I guess looking ahead into 2022, bearing in mind this will be out in late January or early February, I guess what's next on the table for you? What are either you looking forward to accomplishing or what are some of the big headlines, I suppose, in your world?
Oh, well, the big headlines in my world, they're always genetics. So My last name is Strain, and that's what I was born with. So I thought it was pretty appropriate that I was a big Strain collector. So throughout my black market days, I've you know, curated, collected, and maintained a lot of different mother plants, genetics, a lot of seeds. There's so much amazing stuff coming out of the States, even out of Cali, and watching all the breeders all over there. They're doing such wonderful stuff. So I'm excited to introduce new cultivars into our system. I love seeing how cultivars express themselves differently in different systems. For example, if I were to grow something in the dirt, it definitely grows differently in the aeroponics and then even under the close lighting. If I were to take that same cultivar and put it in a dirt grow underneath an old metal halide or HPS lighting, not the same thing. So it's pretty interesting to watch this same strain do different things with in our state-of-the-art grow rooms. So I'm really excited to see our 8 new grow rooms come online and then the new fancy genetics that we got to put in there. We have some, nice C of A results. We're in the, we got some stuff. I think our highest was 34% THC at a 12% moisture or 13. Either way, just tasty stuff. I'm definitely all about I love the flavor profiles, the terpene profiles in cannabis. I'm not necessarily a THC hunter, but the market has kind of gone that way a bit. I personally smoke for flavor. So, I was trying to balance that, but I'm excited to see these new cultivars that we have be put in these rooms under the A3Is. We've done some really cutting edge stuff, with double stacking, a bit of aeroponics. Again, it's a little bit out there, and some listeners hear the podcast will probably think that's nuts. But hey, innovation comes at price, and fortune favors the bold.
I love it. Yeah, absolutely. And it'll be exciting to follow along as we get into 2022 here. So definitely planning to keep in touch. And, Jim, it's great to talk to you here and just get a sense of what you're up to and how Foes has helped out with that. Really appreciate you having you on the podcast this week.
Yeah, you bet. Final statement is that Foes, I chose them as well because of, who they are as people. I went down to their facility. I did not just order these lights, off the internet. I called people. I went down there. I toured grows that had them going. I talked to growers that were using them. I met with the owners. I went to their facility. I measured the light with my own light meter. I did my diligence. I like how they treat customers. I like their warranty, and I like their willingness to work and collaborate.
I love it. Absolutely. Results speak for themselves. And yeah, Jim, really great talking with you. This has been awesome.
Thanks, man.
And that's a wrap on another episode of Growing Indoors. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jim Strain. I know I did. It's always nice to take a brief jaunt across the border over to Canada and learn more about how that market operates. And it's certainly interesting to hear about the interplay between growers and vendors like Foes. These are not just one-off transactions, whether we're talking about LEDs or otherwise. These are essentially business partnerships. And, just like Jim was saying, and certainly other guests on this podcast and other series that we produce here at Cannabis Business Times, those partnerships are critical to the success of the cultivation business. It's all a holistic process. This is the fourth episode, of course, of Growing Indoors. We've got a few more to go. Every Thursday, we're going to be putting these interviews out. Like I say at the end of every episode, give me a shout if there's any particular angle you'd like to hear more about in the indoor cannabis environment. We've got a bunch of these episodes planned, but certainly room to pivot a bit if there's something you want us to dig into, or even an indoor grower you'd like us to spotlight in a future episode. Until then, every Thursday, Growing Indoors is coming out with more interviews on the indoor cannabis cultivation environment, brought to you with the support of Foes.